हरे राम सनाज सनाभुनत्तो सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै शांति 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 ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
So Narad Muni had come to visit Yudhishthira Maharaj. The Rishi, accepting the worship, became well pleased, and eulogizing him with benedictions, commanded the king to take his seat. Commanded by the Rishi, the king took his seat. Then the king sent word unto Krishna in the inner apartments of the arrival of the illustrious one. Hearing of the Rishi's arrival, Draupadi, purifying herself properly, came with a respectful attitude to where Narada was with the Pandavas. The virtuous princess of Panchala, worshipping the celestial Rishi's feet, stood with joined hands before him, properly veiled. Properly veiled, right? So it's not a Muslim thing? Did you notice that word? Okay. The illustrious Narada, pronouncing various benedictions on her, commanded the princess to retire. After Krishna had retired, the illustrious Rishi, addressing in private all the Pandavas with Yudhishthira at their head, said, so here we also see is that Narad Muni comes, it's a very formal situation, the Pandavas have received, then they make arrangement for their wife to come, and also then respect the sage and have some interaction, get benedictions, and then she retires back to her place. Right? So neither is she left out, and neither is she part of the scene, right? In other words, the scene, when she comes, it's her scene. You understand? The other thing is, oh, they want to be there the whole time, right through, why not? But then it's not their scene, it's nobody's scene, right? Because generally when something works, it's either a feminine scene or a masculine scene. There's no such thing as a masculine and feminine scene that's public and formal. Does that make sense? So therefore we see is that each were taken care of appropriately, right? Sage comes, she'll be naturally shy, so it's arranged she's called, so because she's called, she'll come. Then she offers her respect, does her worship, gets her benedictions, then she goes back. You see? So at that time, it's all about her and the Rishi, right? Not she's doing, worshiping the Rishi with the Pandavas. Does that make sense? Like that. Subtle difference here. That way means what she gets is full, right? Because otherwise, if you just stay with everybody else, what full you get? Nothing, right? So Narad Muni said, the renowned princess of Panchala is the wedded wife of you all. Establish a rule amongst yourselves so that disunion may not arise amongst you. There were, in former days, celebrated throughout the three worlds, two brothers named Sunda and Upasunda, living together and incapable of being slain by anyone unless each slew the other. They ruled the same kingdom, lived in the same house, slept in the same bed, sat on the same seat, and ate from the same dish. And yet they killed each other for the sake of Tilottama. Therefore, O Yudhishthira, preserve your friendship for one another, and do that which may not produce disunion amongst you." On hearing this, Yudhishthira asked, "O great Muni, whose sons were the Asuras called Sunda and Upasunda? Whence arose that dissension amongst them, and why did they slay each other? Whose daughter also was this Tilotama, for whose love the maddened brothers killed each other? Was she an Apsara, or the daughter of any celestial? O thou whose wealth is asceticism, we desire, O Brahmana, to hear in detail everything as it happened. Indeed, our curiosity hath become great." Right? So here he said something that's complete, right? He's made the point. Anybody knows what bird that one is? No. Because you hear it in Vrindavan. But, always at this time, like when it's cold like this. Yeah, so he said the point that these brothers who were so close to each other did everything together, killed each other over a woman. So he said that. And so that in itself gets the point across, but at the same time it leaves the door open for more question, you know, to take it further. In other words, you've said the point, as a teacher you're making your point, but then more than that, it should come from the student, right? Does that make sense? Because you have to have this balance between what the teacher puts in and what the teacher draws out. Right? So the teacher, you can put something in, but you only can put it in if there's interest. No interest, then how does it go in? Does that make sense? So you have to create the interest. So when the student asks, then there's an interest. So then when you explain, then they'll be attentive. Right? Does that make sense? That's why in the Vedic Academy, is that even though you have a standard set way of going through something, if the thing itself is not necessarily chronological, though you make a chronological system for teaching it, if a question arises about something that's further on in the studies, it's answered at that time. Right? You don't get the answer, "Oh, we're going to be studying that after 3 months." No, you give the answer now. Because after 3 months, they won't be interested. And then you wonder what happened. Right? If it's something they can't understand, then you explain how they won't be able to understand it until they know certain things. Or take that time to explain all that and teach that. Because the point is when interest is there, that's when learning happens. Right? So that's an important thing. Like we see is Vishwamitra. I think it was Vishwamitra. Yeah, he took Ramachandra, right? Yeah, so Vishwamitra took Ramachandra. And when he took him into the forest, he also would teach him. So then when they'd be walking and they'd see the stars, then he'd mention, "Oh, that's this constellation." And then they'd ask questions about astrology, so he'd teach them astrology. Or he'd make something about some herb, and then he would teach them Ayurveda, and like this. So whatever that they would inquire about, that's what would be taught. But at the same time, you're creating an environment in which it can be, and you're trying to generate it. It's not, "Oh, we put everything there, but they did nothing about it." No, you put everything there and try to generate it. When it's generated, then you deal with it. Does that make sense? Yes?
Maharaj, what about if the student is interested, doesn't know how to ask properly?
Student is interested, does not know how to ask properly. But they should take the risk. You know what I'm saying? See, that's why small children learn and adults don't. Right? It's simply this one point. The child will ask, even if it makes them look stupid. They will speak the new language, even though they make mistakes. And if they make a mistake, they laugh. But the adult won't speak, because if they make a mistake, they'll feel bad. So that means in 3 months, the child knows the local language, and after 3 years, the adult kind of can get by and, you know, talk to the mailman or something like that. That's about it. Buy a few vegetables, and that's all. It's simply this one point. Anything that you want to excel in, you have to take a risk. That's the whole point. So that's what your conditioned nature is. What are your needs, and therefore, what are you willing to risk? You understand? So therefore, if you want something but you're not willing to take any risk in it, then that's not actually yours. Right? It's an interest, not a need. Right? So in the conditioned nature, there'll be needs. That's definite. But there'll also be interests. But those interests haven't developed. Right? So they could develop by cultivation. If they're important, you'll try to develop. But if not, then those can be let go. Right? In other words, less things you have to worry about is needs, the easier it is to perform your devotional service. But point is need is where you're willing to take a risk. And even if you need, you're not willing to take a risk, you won't get it. Because endeavor means risk. Right? In other words, you have a desire, that'll turn into need. Right? By contemplation. So then, only by endeavor can that be attained. In other words, prayojana has a dual function. One, it is the inspiration to perform the activity. It is the result of the activity. Right? So we see much of the time, Prabhupada talks about result, but generally when he's talking, much of the time when he's talking about sambandha, abhideya, prayojana and all that, he talks about need. Right? What is the ultimate need of the living? Now, you can say, what's the ultimate goal of the living entity? Okay, that's the goal, but I need this. Right? That's why I'm not going for that. But one's not seeing as the ultimate need of the living entity is to develop pure love for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So it does both of those. It's what drives you to do things. It's the result once having done that. Does that make sense? So then, and it's also the aparoksha experience of the activity. Aparoksha? Okay. Means that knowledge or that understanding or that which is gained without being directly conscious of it. Right? In other words, you're performing an activity and experience is there. Right? And the experience is there as long as you don't observe it. As soon as you observe it, it goes away. You know? So then that also is there. You know? So that's the... Okay, that would answer a big question. Why it is when something's going on and then it's being experienced and then the man comments on the experience, then it goes away. And then he wonders, what happened? Like that. Because he works in the intellectual field, so you can intellectualize and it still remains. But in the field of the mind, it's just an experience. And as soon as you bring the intelligence in, then it goes out of that experience, changes to another. Okay. Does that make sense? So, when the going's good, go with the flow. Does that make sense? Like that, yeah. So therefore, that's why in the Vedic, there is a set pattern, but at the same time, there's not. It's the most interesting system. Means it's like the Western system, they try to expose you to many things and draw out this and that by just exposing you to it and this and that. Let us say like music, they'll show you some jazz, they'll show you this, they'll show you that. But at the end of the day, all you can do is read music and play that. You know what I'm saying? The Indian is you just learn by rote what everybody else did and that's it. Doesn't matter. You don't do anything on your own. If the teacher didn't give it to you, you don't play it. And at the end of the day, you can make up music. Interesting, isn't it? The opposite thing. The one is you can only think kind of how you've been shown some experiences and maybe even not even that. And the other one is you can go way beyond whatever you've been taught. So this is the balance. They have newer and newer terms for it, but it's the same thing. Do you stuff it in their head, or do you, you know, drag it out, you know, like that? So, now I think, what is it? Now they got a new thing called, what, objectives? They keep changing the names of it.
Yeah,
all the,
outcomes-based.
Yeah, outcomes-based, like that. And what's the other one?
Traditional.
Yeah, traditional. All they're just saying is, do you learn by rote, or do you, you know, like, you know, like this. They've been arguing on this since what's that French guy? When was that? 1800s or yeah. So it's been over 100 years. They've been, you know, wrestling with this. But the Vedic is, until you put something in, how do you draw something out? Right? I give you a glass, okay? And I put nothing in the glass and I say, drink. No, until I fill up the glass, then you can drink. So that's the point. That's the Vedic approach. So the point is when the interest is there to drink, that's when you give the stuff. Does that make sense? So the student also then should have that interest. So by service, then the interest is there. And then one has to take that risk. That's why brahmacharis are trained in humility, because if you're humble, you can ask. Because even if you make a fool of yourself, it doesn't matter. But if you're proud, you can't ask, because if you make a mistake, then you'll look stupid. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why in the Vedic system, the main study is done then. Yeah. Is that okay? Yes.
It says that the nature of the soul is the servant of Krishna. So why does living his own nature, a jiva, falls in the traps of Maya?
Why does he leave his own nature? Because he sees Krishna's happiness and he thinks, I want that. You know what I'm saying? It's like this. Feminine nature is whatever you have, what someone else has must be better. Right? Even if it's not better, you know, one girl has a sari, it's a really nice sari, so another girl is wearing a sari. The other girl's sari is half the price and not very, you know, like that. But still she'll worry that it's better. And everybody thinks it's better. Right? So that's feminine nature, right? So the living entity is enjoying on that feminine platform, but they say Krishna enjoying, and because it's variety, it's something different than you think. Oh, maybe that's better. Or I would like that. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, out of jealousy, out of envy, therefore it arises. Yes?
Is there any circumstances where the jiva is actually the direct personal association with the Lord and the
force? Is there any time means the living entities in direct association? Means physically direct, but as far as consciousness, no. Means the devotees, they'll so much of the time directly serve Krishna. Like you see, it's when Krishna comes home in the evening, then Mother Jashoda is so excited, she goes to make all the arrangements for his eating and everything else. So then the maidservants, she tells them to give Krishna a bath. So Radharani doesn't go in the evening to Krishna's house. She stays at her house. So she only sends some of her maidservants. So then they directly bathe Krishna and take care. Radharani's not there, they're doing it themselves. But they never think, I am directly the servant. They always think, I'm doing this on behalf of Radharani. How would Radharani want this done? Does that make sense? So the jiva always, they don't have it as such a direct relationship. Because the direct positions, the actual direct, actually there's only one actual direct, and that's Radharani. But otherwise, it appears as direct within the rasa. Then Mother Jashoda, Nanda Baba. Then you have Sridham, Sudham, Subal. A few of those, depending, because you have four kinds of friends. You know, how you say, equal, junior, senior, and confidential. Then you have the servants like Danishta, Raktaka. Then you have the Shanta. You'll have Surabhi. You'll have Madhavendrapuri. You'll have Sukansari, you'll have the deer, a few of these that in their own areas, then they're the heads of that group. But actually, they're all just servants of Radharani.
So, this is understood to be in Gokul, never in Alok. That from Gokul, Alok, 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 the whole thing flows from the nobody can fall.
Yeah, from Goloka, no one can fall.
So, in Gokul, I just contemplated the concept of union for the sight. Not just the physical direct associated by the sight of Krishna. Because sometimes devotees get this concept that we fall from Goloka Vrindavan.
That's another thing. That's just because they're not thinking. If you ask them seriously, then and actually analytically go through it, they'll see that what they're talking about is not. Because all devotees talk about Vrindavan. Yeah, Krishna did this, Krishna did that. Where did you get that? Oh, it's in Bhagavatam. So what is that? Is that Goloka or Gokul? And, you know, they'll think it's Goloka, but no, but Krishna's here, his pastime. Oh, yeah, it's Gokul. The thing is just, it's a point no one even thinks. That's all. It's not that they're specifically committed to it, and they just don't think about it. You know, because by default, they just take it as there. Because Prabhupada always talks about going back to Godhead. But the point is Godhead is also here. And the Boma Lila is back to Godhead.
So it's still, we had all the experiences like this with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the last one. He was in direct relationship with
Krishna Das.
Yes. The assistant of Mahaprabhu when he went, you know, he got this.
Oh yeah, but still he's in that position assisting Sarup Damodar.
Correct. But in the moment that he's traveling with Mahaprabhu, he's the only one.
Yeah, yeah, no, but it means I'm saying you can have physical direct interaction, but you never consider yourself to be the direct servant, like that. But direct service is so much of the time is there. You know, it's like Rupa goes and personally goes and gets Krishna. Krishna is in a kunj with another gopi. Rupa himself goes and pulls him out. Goes and says, oh, your favorite calf has just fallen into this problem. Please come quickly. And then, you know, and then he comes out of the kunj and all that. And as soon as he comes out, then, you know, Rupa grabs him and says, what's this nonsense? What are you doing in there with her? You know, you don't know what you're supposed to, like this. You know, so it's seeming it's direct, but it's always on behalf of, like that. So physically, one can have that direct interaction. But one's always in the mood that it's as servant of whoever's ahead of you. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Coming back for education, how you work the punishment?
How you work punishment?
Inside the Vedic
academy. It depends, like that. It's whatever works. Main thing is discussion. Main thing is that it means the first is just making a comment. After that is more strong comments. It means first would be, let's say, a light comment. Next would be sarcasm. Next would be some strong comment. Next would be silence. Next after that's a storm, you know. And then after that would be physical punishment. Let's say work. After that would be corporal punishment. After that would be removing from the school. That would be the natural, like that. You know, but the natural is not used these days. So it comes to the point of, you mention it to them, you mention it, if the relationship's good enough, because the point is only to the degree of surrender of the student can you be strong. Prabhupada was very strong with those who were close, very nice with those who were far. Like that. So it's only the closer you are, the stronger you can be. Generally, the West does it the opposite. Like that. But it's he was the most strong, heavy with those who were close. Anyone who was close knows it. Like that. So then, like that. So means depending upon the amount of surrender that's there, commitment to the educational system, then you can be a little strong. If there's not that much commitment and what they do is, you know, do wrong is consistent, then basically you just talk to their parents. If they can do something great, if not, you just remove them. Right? So you can't, in other words, the modern society doesn't allow that much strong commitment to the student as is fruitful in the Vedic, because the general devotee does not have any commitment to anybody other than themselves, neither to Krishna, neither to their family, neither to anyone, like that. So due to that lack of trust, therefore, you can only use the system partially, like that. You know, but the point is it still can be used, but you can only use it partially. So therefore, as soon as somebody just doesn't fit, then they're just removed. That's it. Like that. Because in the Vedic, everybody knows you're supposed to be there. So it's either the teacher is going to chastise you or your parents is going to chastise you for not listening to the teacher. But you don't have that. The Westerners, very few. If the Westerners went to a boarding school, then they have some understanding of this. But if they went to the regular government schools, they would have no idea what it means, a teacher-student relationship. They've never had it. Basically, they haven't had a father, you know, child relationship, mother-child relationship, husband-wife relationship, friend-friend relationship. They haven't had relationships, so they don't know. So this is way on the back burner, teacher-student, you know. They're still trying to figure out husband-wife, you know, or a friend, like that. So it's not. Rasa is the Westerner's weakest point, like that. They have no idea what rasa is. At least not the five rasas. The seven secondary, that they know very well. You know, horror, what is it? Fear, all those things like that. Friends get together, what do? They just goof. They're not actually friends. They have to have some third party that they're goofing on, watching a movie, playing a stupid game. They can't actually sit with each other and be friends one-on-one. They can't do that. So they factually, even though they're in the situations of the five rasas, they're only experiencing the secondary seven rasas. So only if you follow, basically following the Vedic culture or aspects of it that come down through religion, can you taste the five rasas. So that's why the modern man is so frustrated, because they want these rasas, but they have no idea how to taste them. You know, like that. It's like the, what do you call it? The bee on the outside of the honey jar. They know there's something there, but they can't get at it. Right? And so for the main key is spiritual. Right? Because if you understand spiritual rasa, you can convert that into what material rasa is. Right? Those who've followed the Vedas, material rasa, you can convert it into spiritual. But you have to start from somewhere. So if you don't know what rasa is, you can't teach them material rasa. So you can start from spiritual. And from that purification, they might get an idea and be able to pull it back. Or just go back to Godhead and don't worry about it. Right? Like that. But nowadays, previously they weren't worried about it, but today they are. Is that okay? Section 211. Vaishampayana said, hearing these words of Yudhishthira, Narada replied, O son of Prita, listen with thy brothers to me as I recite this old story, O Yudhishthira, exactly as everything happened. In olden days, a mighty daitya named Nikumbha, endued with great energy and strength, was born in the race of the great Asura Hiranyakashipu. Unto this Nikumbha were born two sons called Sunda and Upasunda. Both of them were mighty asuras, endued with great energy and terrible prowess. The brothers were both fierce and possessed of wicked hearts. Those daityas were both of the same resolution and ever engaged in achieving the same tasks and ends. Right? So that means same resolution, same task, same end. So means the whole concept, their sambandha, their abhideya, their prayojana, always the same. Therefore, they did everything exactly the same. They were ever shares with each other in happiness as well as in woe. The brothers never speaking unless they were together, did only what was agreeable to the other, and never went anywhere unless together. Of exactly the same disposition and habits, they seemed to be one individual divided into two parts. Endued with great energy and ever of the same resolution in everything they undertook, the brothers gradually grew up, always entertaining the same purpose, desirous of subjugating the three worlds. The brothers, after due initiation, went to the mountains of of Vindhya, severe were the ascetic penances they performed there. Exhausted with hunger and thirst, with matted locks on their heads, and attired in barks of trees, they acquired sufficient ascetic merit at length. Besmearing themselves with dirt from head to foot, living upon air alone and standing on their toes, they threw pieces of the flesh of their bodies into the fire. So does that mean kids are really austere because they cover themselves from head to toe? With? I wonder how much piety they get from that. Their arms upraised and eyes fixed. Long was the period for which they observed the vows. Right? Why eyes fixed?
Concentrate.
Because otherwise, if you're in class and you're looking here and looking there, and that, it means you're not understanding what's going on. Right? During the course of their ascetic penances, a wonderful incident occurred there. For the mountains of Vindhya, heated for a long course of years by the power of their ascetic austerities, began to emit vapor from every part of their bodies. Beholding the severity of their austerities, the celestials became alarmed, and the gods began to cause numerous obstructions to impede the progress of their asceticism. The celestial repeatedly tempted the brothers by means of every precious possession and the most beautiful girls. The brothers broke not their vows. Then the celestials once more manifested before the illustrious brothers the powers of illusion, for it seemed their sisters, mothers, wives, and other relatives with disordered hair, ornaments, and robes were running towards them in terror, pursued and struck by a rakshasa with a lance in hand. It seemed that the women implored the help of the brothers, crying, "Oh, save us!" But all this went for nothing, for firmly wedded thereto, the brothers did not break their vows. And when it was found that all this produced not the slightest impression on any of the two, both the women and the rakshasa vanished from sight. At last, the grandsire himself, the Supreme Lord, ever seeking the welfare of all, came unto those great asuras and asked them to solicit the boon they desired. But here's another Supreme Lord capital. Then the brothers, Sunda and Upasunda, both of great prowess, beholding the grandsire, rose from their seats and waited with joined palms. Right? Means this is a standard thing, is also in like your in the Vedic martial science, martial arts. Then you learn, means the first level is you learn the actual moves of this, of the art, right? And in its standard applications. Second level, if you have character, means the first one you can learn even if your character is not good, but after that, without character, you can't do it. Second level is if you have character, then you're taught how the same techniques can apply in any situation. Right? In other words, very, very, you know, kind of secret kind of things. Third level is then through your austerities. Third level, you can do amazing activities. You know, some of these guys could jump. You know, they can jump to the top of the building or off the building. They can do amazing things. Fourth level, then the deity enters the person and fights through the person. And then the fourth one is the deity just fights on their own. You know, so we can see from this that that put Prahlad Maharaj on the fifth level of martial arts. The deity came and killed Hiranyakashipu without going through him. So in getting to these higher levels, then they have to perform austerities. In performing these austerities, they stand in the water, perform chanting their mantras. Then all these illusions will come up, that they feel that snakes are surrounding them, or these waves, or crocodile. All these different things will come. And if they get scared, then that's as far as they can get. If they don't get scared, then they'll get farther. Right? Does that make sense? So it's the normal thing is when one's performing austerities like this, at some point, the illusions will come up. Right? Yes?
I refer to the definition of vow.
Vow. You have a determination that you're going to perform a specific activity for a specific result. You know, for and generally there's a time frame on it or a situation in which it will be performed. Like that. Like you take the vow of fasting on Ekadasi. So no matter what the situation is, you will fast. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, for the purpose of pleasing Krishna, because it develops devotion. Is that okay? Yes.
Well, it seems like whether it's a divine or a demoniac golden vow, the same test.
Same test. No, there's no difference whether it's a material endeavor, spiritual endeavor, or within spiritual, whether it's a pious or impious. The methods of everything is the same, right? The pure devotee drives the car, a very pious man drives the car, or an absolute demon drives the car. The method of driving is the same. How they may drive it, what their goal is different, but how the car works is exactly the same. That's a very important point, because devotees will take it, spiritual work's different than material, therefore I have to live these two lives of being practical materially, and then I have my spiritual life. And because of that, then they get frustrated, because they neither really get the material and neither really get the spiritual. Because the process is exactly the same. Like that, there's no difference, because there is no such thing of there being no Krishna. It's our idea that there's no Krishna, right? We're the one in illusion that there's no Krishna, but Krishna's always there, right? Krishna's in every atom, between every atom. He's the potency that makes anything work. So where is there anything that anybody does that Krishna's not involved? But the person doesn't see Krishna, therefore he's called in Maya. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why the process, there's only one, Krishna says there's one path, he doesn't say many paths. So that means the process of going through it means you have sin, then you have piety, then you have liberation, then you have devotion. Right? It's all one path. So therefore, getting out of sin, you know, means working with karma. It's the same whether you're a karmi or you're a devotee. Working with liberation is the same if you're a devotee or a karmi. A jnani. The process is the same. Right? To free yourself material energy is through the process of naishkarmya. Right? You go to any of these big established Mayavadi impersonalists, when they speak to the people, they just preach naishkarmya. The same exact thing that we say. But their purpose is follow naishkarmya to get liberated and your job's done. We say follow naishkarmya to free yourself from material contamination so that you can perform bhakti. But the process of freeing yourself is the same. Right? If you want to cook, the cooking process is the same. Right? Everything that a devotee does, if a materialist would do it in the same way. It's just because that's just how the nature works, right? And this nature is a reflection of the spiritual, therefore it works the same as there also. Just the results you can get from here and the experience is much less. Right? So that kind of vision, then one is able to then see everything he does in connection to Krishna and therefore purify everything. Right? Without that vision, then you'll always have, there's my spiritual life, then there's my material life. Right? Or, there's my spiritual life, and then there's all the Maya I'm in, and therefore I get disheartened.
From that principle, devotee is performing the austerities, but can't see through, as you say, Krishna and everything, then this cannot be called an austerity properly.
No, because then austerity is not called austerity, because then that becomes your sacrifice, because you're doing it for a higher purpose. You're doing it to please someone else, because that's all ultimately there is. Right? We see in here the working principle of Sunda and Upasunda. It means they do things together, this, that, but that's not actually the working principle. The working, the what do you call it? The Surup Lakshana here is that they do everything to please each other. And that therefore manifests in all these others. Like Krishna, devotee has this 26 qualities of devotee, but the Swarup Lakshana is his surrender to Krishna to please Krishna. Right? That. Then all the other 25 qualities are in support of that. They're manifestations of that. Right? So that's the thing, is that sacrifice is the main thing that's trying to be trained into the living entity. Right? And so there's so many ways. So you won't do it this way, you try it that way. You don't do it that way, you do, you know, like something that you're attached to, you know, you will serve. That's the whole point. So therefore, the gross materialist is serving his, you know, family or country or society, but he is serving. So if he has that service mood, all we have to do is introduce bhakti, and we have someone who has a nice service attitude. Right? But someone who won't serve anybody, he becomes a devotee, he still won't. Right? That's, yes.
We don't have, well, personally, we don't have some attachment for Krishna at this point. And will that come through service? Like, does it work both ways?
Will it come through service? If that's your purpose, yes. I mean, in other words, I don't have affection for Krishna. I want to have it. And so affection is shown through service or doing something to please that person. Therefore, I will do those things which I understand and to the best of my ability to please Krishna, with the purpose of pleasing him, and in this way coming to that platform where, you know, I actually have that affection. So that's why it's called sadhana bhakti. That technically speaking, the purpose of it is exactly the same as someone who has prema. Therefore, Baladev classifies it as bhakti. And that's based on Rupa Goswami's position of, what is it? Anyavilashita. The ita means it's in, either it's in pursuance of, right? Pure unalloyed devotion, or those activities in pursuance of pure unalloyed devotion. We classify it all as bhakti, right? Because the mood is right. But technically, as far as tattva goes, it's not bhakti, because we don't have it. But it's the method to get it. Right? You know, you don't have the, you know, the vegetables when you get in your car to go to the market. But by the process of going to the market in the car, you'll get them. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's non-different in the whole process. But if you say, okay, I got in the car, I got the vegetables. No, no, until you get to the market and buy them, then you have the vegetables. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, someone who understands the complete whole, and the rasiks, they see it as part of the thing. But for those who make a mistake or are proud or over-enthusiastic, you know, then you point out, no, technically it's not there. And the purpose is to inspire them to go forward, not to put them down, because then it makes your ego feel better. Like that. Does that make sense? So that way then it's connected. It's connected. So you just have to keep at it with that determination, and then you will get that. Right? Is that okay? Yes. How to overcome the illusions? You have to know what your goal is. And you have to know the method of the illusions, right? So then, you know, the illusions there of, you know, fasting for Ekadasi or something, you know, you don't probably have to worry that the demigods are going to be sending, you know, your mother running, you know, with a rakshasa after her, saying, save me, and that kind of thing. The illusions that you're going to get are, you know, seeing this huge, you know, pile of prasad that you'd love to eat and stuff like that, you know. It'll be, you know what I'm saying? So you just have to keep your focus on what you want to get done and do that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Then the brothers Sunda and Upasunda, both of great prowess, beholding the grandsire, rose from their seats and waited with joined palms. The brothers both said unto the god. Now it comes up another aspect. Why you say waited? Because in here it's not necessarily because weighted with joined palms means they couldn't have been waiting on Brahma by doing various services. So here the waiting meant that they were actually waiting, you know. Because if you wait on someone, you serve, but then the element of why wait you would take is the central principle. Because if you're going to serve somebody properly, it has to be, you have to wait and see what works for them. You have to be able to hold back, control your endeavor, that it works at the speed and in the quality that the other person appreciates. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore you can say you waited on somebody because you gave them prasad, and then you sit there and wait and then see. They want more, what do they want more? Rather than, okay, feed them up, just pile it up like that, Hari Bol, now make my plate, sit down and eat. Right? Like that. So waiting means you have to do something and then wait and see. Then do the next thing and wait and see. Use your intelligence, what works. Then do again and then wait. Right? Does that make sense? We're missing out on the Spanish, what do you call it? Etymological definition of waiting and serving. Okay. O grandsire, if thou hast been pleased with these ascetic austerities, and art, O Lord, propitious unto us, then let us have knowledge of all weapons and all powers of illusion. Let us be endued with great strength, and let us be able to assume any form at will. Last of all, let us also be immortal. Hearing these words of theirs, Brahman said, accept the immortality you ask for, you shall be given all that you desire. Solicit you some form of death, by which you may still be equal unto the immortals. Since you have undergone these severe ascetic austerities, from desire of sovereignty alone, I cannot confer on you the boon of immortality. You have performed your ascetic penances even for the subjugation of the three worlds. It is for this, O mighty Daityas, that I cannot grant you what you desire. So why can't he grant what they desire?
Selfish motive?
It's a selfish motive. So what motive could he have granted immortality?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's actually the one he can grant. Because he is Brahma, he's head of the Sampradaya. So he can give you devotion. Like that. Were you going to say that? You say? You?
I was going to say that there's only Krishna can give that.
Yes, of course, only Krishna can give. So Krishna will give when the devotee requests it. But he's not going to request Krishna for immortality for that. That's why he says, you're only doing it for material sovereignty. Therefore, I can't ask. Is that okay? Narada continued, hearing these words of Brahman, Sunda and Upasunda said, O grandsire, let us have no fear then from any created being, created thing, mobile or immobile in the three worlds, except only from each other. The grandsire then said, I grant you what you have asked for, even this your desire. Granting them this boon, the grandsire made them desist from their asceticism and return to his own region. Then the brothers, those mighty Daityas, having received those several boons, became incapable of being slain by anybody in the universe. They then returned to their own abode. All their friends and relatives, beholding those Daityas of great intelligence, crowned with success in the matter of the boons they had obtained, became exceedingly glad. Sunda and Upasunda then cut off their matted locks and wore cornets on their heads. What are cornets? It's kind of long things with the buttons on it, or I mean the ones that like this with the ice cream inside. They don't want on their hand. A little jaunty, you know, off at an angle, you know, like that. But they both would have worn the same one. So not one would wear strawberry, one chocolate. No, they both wear the same one. Okay. Cornets, yeah, means crowns. But are they full size crowns, or are they, is they different from a crown? It's, yeah, I get the idea they're smaller. Otherwise, they say trumpets, right? Attired in costly robes and ornaments, they looked exceedingly handsome. They caused the moon to rise over their city every night, even out of his season. Right? So because they were so powerful, they got the moon to rise, you know, rise, be a full moon over the city every night, you know, even though it's just out of fear. Friends and relatives gave themselves up to joy and merriment with happy hearts. Eat, feed, give, make merry, sing, drink. These were the words heard every day in every house. So even these, the demons, they're still feeding people and, you know, giving others. They're sharing, but it still is pranamoy. Right? It's just, you know, your minds are therefore like that. Here and there arose loud uproars of hilarity mixed with clapping of hands, which filled the whole city of the Daityas. Why would hilarity with clapping of hands be mentioned? Why that?
Because when a high class person laughs and stuff, they don't show it so physically.
Yeah, they don't. So that's one thing, but also, as would be here, when Rupa Goswami mentions, you know, happiness, then he gives grades of it. So the first is just, you know, slight little corner of the mouth. It was a slight little thing. Then there's a smile, full smile. Then the smile where you see the teeth. Then there's laughing. Then I'm not sure what the next one is, but the last one is where you're kind of like jumping up and down and clapping your hands and stuff like that. You know, then you know it's like that. But in connection with that, then the clapping of hands and all that would be more refined than, you know, yes, you know, that kind of thing, you know. Okay, like that. Okay. So, yeah. Loud uproars of hilarity mixed with clappings of hands which filled the whole city of the Daityas, who, being capable of assuming any form at will, were engaged in every kind of amusement and sport. They scarcely noticed the flight of time, even regarding a whole year as a single day. Wow. Okay. So we'll end here, then we'll find out how these demons then killed each other.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
God. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.